can be recognized and contained or channeled properly, then one can use anger positively to take action against injustice, crime, and falsehood or corruption. Anger is in our nature because reality requires this emotion to deal with evil. It animates us to take action even when we would otherwise hesitate or have fear. Anger is a double-edged knife or sword, and it cuts both ways. Handle with care, otherwise it will cut even the person handling it.
Welcome to the QR Lab. My name is Kuldeep Tagore, and I'm here with...
Hello, hello.
I'm here with hello, hello. His name is Amr Zeki.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
And the two of us are on a quest, and this quest involves reality. So we're here to question our reality because it must be questioned. We can't trust it. But... we also have to trust it. So we're here to be in the lab, to experiment, to throw ideas around, and to hopefully shed some insight, and if not, to spark some curiosity, to spark some, maybe your own quest. So tell me.
Hello, hello, sir. How are you today?
And what do you have for us today?
No, the question is, what do you have? That's the question. No, we're going to talk about...
You're really making me angry.
No. We're going to talk about the double edge. What is the double edge? It's the double edge of anger.
Anger is a real... There's a lot of anger in society, don't you think? Even right now. It's such a visceral human emotion.
A very good segue. Allow me to begin.
Why don't you begin?
Here is the start of it.
The readings.
Here we go. Anger, the double edge. The irascible nature of man was created for a reason. Anger is the quintessential quality that retains a duality of benefit and harm. It can be a gateway into many evils, both small and large. It is destructive, especially to the person who harbors it. However, anger properly controlled and directed gives man the energy and the courage to take action against evil, be it big or small.
So interesting. You just throw a D in front of that word and becomes danger. No, I mean danger.
Never thought about that. That is quite insightful.
Is anger necessary? Do you think we need it?
The irascible nature of man.
I think it's one of those things on a spectrum. It can go too far and becomes a malfunction. Causes you to malfunction.
Can we get a few things straight here? Can we get a few things straight?
Let's do it.
<It's> good. Okay. All joking aside, anger seems to me, and forgive me, I may be presuming here, but it seems to me like it's part and parcel of our nature. Like the nature of mankind is one of its quintessential properties is anger. The irascible nature of man. Think about it. If we didn't get angry, would there ever be any justice? I know that's kind of a weird way of getting at it.
Well, I would say, you know, without becoming like a Vulcan where we have no emotions, it is one of the emotions that can help us. It can help us achieve justice or get to justice. But is it required? I don't think so.
But it depends what you mean by anger. Like, you can be angry and calm.
Okay, let me throw this out there. You're very much making the case that it's part of our human nature. And that's absolutely true. But is it part of our nature that should be controlled and questioned and put under control?
I'm going to answer that with a quote. May I?
Yes.
Here's a quote.
It's your podcast. You do what you want on it.
No, I just say, here's a quote. It is not he who gets angry who is strong, but it is he who restrains himself when angry who is truly strong. Okay, that's right. Prophet Muhammad said that.
So the idea that when you get angry, you appear strong, but it's actually in containing that where you really retain your strength.
And that's yes, so it's a double-edged sword. Here's another quote. Anger begins with insanity and ends in regret. It's a very brilliant quote. This is by a companion of the Prophet, Ali. So anger can be extremely harmful and bad. It can be beneficial if it's restrained, controlled, properly adjudicated with a sense of psychological calm, if at all possible.
I like to refer to the scene in the Bible, the event where Jesus goes into the temple in Jerusalem and sees the moneylenders and shows absolute wrath. And even in the
turns biblical, the tables, right?
Right.
You know, causes a scene, a major scene.
Right. So again, we see anger.
Peace be upon him, by the way.
Peace be upon him. Is there a justification for that anger? I'm not talking about that specific, but we don't necessarily. Okay, let me give you an example. In our common day work practice, people do get angry, but they're really not allowed to get angry.
But civil, you got to be civil, right?
You have to be civil.
There's a decorum you got to have with people, right?
So Jesus, for all his pacifism, so to say.
Well, I don't think he was passive. He's compassionate.
No, I didn't say passive. Yeah. Pacifism. He was a peaceful
pacifist,
person.
Pacifist, right.
Yeah, pacifist. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Correct.
He displays this incredible anger where he disrupts the moneylenders, throws over tables, yells, and, you know, at least that's what the scene...
As a prophet of God, he was a man of great zeal. That's without a doubt. Despite all his, you know, love and compassion, and, you know, all prophets are men of zeal. You know, they're there to carry the message forward. But to answer your question, without getting into theological matters, to answer your question...
There's a line.
Correct.
I love the story that, you know, you have told me many times about, and I can't remember who exactly, I think it's Ali, actually, who is going to strike down somebody
in battle.
Give us the historical context.
Yeah, so actually, correct me here if I'm wrong, I'm not sure if it was that companion or another companion of the Prophet, but it was in the heat of battle, they were engaged in some kind of, you know, this is during the time when the Quraysh was trying to basically... I'm not even sure if that's correct, but there was a defensive war because they were basically being, you know, under massacre, and so they were engaged in battle. What happened was, pardon me, this companion was having a sword fight and was about to strike down the enemy, his opponent. And in that moment, the opponent spit in his face, and he walked away. And then after the battle, people came to, they said, why did you let this person go? You know, they could have struck you down. He said, because in that moment, I felt anger well up in my heart. And I knew that if I had struck him down, it would be for my own personal reasons, out of my anger, rather than for the sake of God. So he protected himself from committing a sin, because killing someone in anger is absolutely not justified. But if you're doing it in a war where you're defending, then it's not personal. Right, so there's a kind of a line, right? So when he became swelled with anger, he walked away, because that would have been a crime to strike someone.
I think that this is absolutely one of the best examples I've heard where restraint,
imagine,
of that anger is required to maintain your own humanity,
your own integrity,
and your faith in the higher,
correct,
in a higher, in quest of a higher acquisition of how to behave.
Well,
right?
The thing, if you're striking people out of vengeance and anger and hatred, you are destroying yourself. You're not just destroying.
Right, so you're no longer doing.
You're no longer just. You're actually violating. You're committing major sin. And that is absolutely, like, human life is sacrosanct. However, if these people are killing you and destroying you and stealing your land, you only have the right to strike them as they've struck you, not an inch more. And if they stop, you stop.
Okay, so this is from the Quran? This is a Quranic...
This is Islamic tradition.
Islamic
teaching,
tradition.
Correct.
So this idea that
just
there's
war,
a balance...
It's the idea of just war, right?
There's an idea that there's a balance.
There are lines and delineations that are in the moral structure of mankind that are in existence in order to regulate the irascible nature. Irascible. Ire. Anger. This can be a gateway for evil action, right? So... to have moral order. This example is historical example is quite fascinating, because this person is engaged in battle and could have struck that person down. He had the upper hand, but he walked away. And imagine the restraint and the control that this person had in the heat of battle. His moral spine was so straight that he could not actually strike him down because he felt it would have been out of anger, out of a personal insult, and that would have been a crime because that is not justified.
So when we're angry and acting out of our own self-interest, maybe...
It's out of ego, and that is not justified because your ego is subservient to truth, to higher authority.
So this is very much a double-edged sword. It's such a double-edged sword.
It cuts both ways.
It does. It's necessary in order to... It's necessary because it's just a part of who we are, right? I mean, doesn't everybody get angry? Isn't that just part of being a human being?
Right, but when you get... Somebody does you wrong. Somebody insults you.
So we need it. We need anger.
You get insulted, right? Publicly or whatever. Stop. You said this once before. Between stimulus and response, there's a space.
Right. This is Viktor Frankl.
Yeah. And take that space. Take that time, right? It's a similar idea here. So
some people don't have it.
You have to protect yourself against your anger. Protect
yourself.
Some
people don't have it. Is it a practice? Is it possible to develop this sort
absolutely.
Of sort of valve where you say, I'm angry, but I'm going to channel this anger into a proper response, into a response that's productive, in a response that is maintains my own integrity and my own belief system.
Absolutely. Now, this addresses this. Conversely, if anger can be recognized and contained or channeled properly, then one can use anger positively to take action against injustice, crime, and falsehood or corruption. Anger is in our nature because reality requires this emotion to deal with evil. It animates us to take action even when we would otherwise hesitate or have fear. Anger is a double-edged knife or sword, and it cuts both ways. Handle with care. Otherwise, it will cut even the person handling it. It will turn against you.
Frustration.
Yeah. Don't let it get to you.
This is a shade of anger, isn't it?
Absolute irritability is a kind of anger. Frustration. Impatience. Impatience and anger go together, right? You get impatient, it arouses. No. Regulate. It's not good. We're all amenable to this, right? We all fail in this way.
So, you know, since we're going into some, religious references, there is a line in the Bible where I guess Jesus said, you have heard that it was said to those who lived long ago, don't commit murder, and all who commit murder will be in danger of judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with their brother or sister will be in danger of judgment.
Right.
What is that about?
It's very wise. Very wise statement. I'll tell you another incident. You know, I know the Islamic tradition the best, but of course, Christianity and ancient Hindu religions and Eastern and Buddhism, all religious traditions, they all address anger. There's an element where they're talking about this. You know, there was an incident where during the time of the Prophet Muhammad, this Arab came out of the desert. And he said, I want to meet this wise man. You know, this guy calls himself a prophet. I want to meet him, right? He was an individual of influence. So he goes and meets the prophet. And he said, oh, prophet of God, tell me some wise words. Just tell me whatever you think I can benefit from. And then he says, do not become angry. And then he got irritated. He said, what do you mean? Tell me something. He said, do not anger. And he got more angry. He said, I came here. I want to hear words of wisdom. And then he said, do not become angry. The guy got up and left, and he was super. And he got all. He said, "What kind of prophet is this? He's just telling me not to get angry." And he's a brilliant demonstration. I mean, it's almost a paradox, right? It's the most brilliant. It's like a scene out of a film. This guy crosses the desert, comes out of nowhere. He's a man of influence. He wants to meet this influential individual. He says, "Give me some wisdom that I have never encountered before. Don't get angry." The depth of that.
It seems
like,
though, in that situation, the advice given was almost specific for that individual to make this very point, right?
That's right.
As if somebody had come and who, it seems that maybe in this situation, the prophet, peace be upon him, was absolutely aware that
maybe.
This was that person's weakness. So
maybe that's what he needed. Maybe that was the wisdom, right?
So it's kind of. It's kind of like, when anybody says, somebody says, okay, calm down. Nobody ever calmed down in the history of calming down.
Never.
When somebody tells you to calm down, right? It's the has the almost the paradoxical opposite effect. Like, are you trying to tell me to calm down? I can't calm, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah. So people need to feel validated. That's
heard.
Probably the or heard. That's the fastest way. Somebody who is angry, there's levels to it, right? You can be angry internally, but outwardly you remain calm.
Have you ever asked yourself...
Is that a problem?
Well, yes, because it can hurt you internally. But have you asked yourself this question? Is this worthwhile to get angry over? You know? Like,
certainly in the moment, I'm sure everybody who's ever been angry feels justified in it. It feels right sometimes to get angry about something. Or maybe you're just not aware. You're aware you're getting angry, but you almost can't stop yourself.
But what is justified? I mean, you're dealing with a computer and it stops working and you get so irritable and then it's a gateway to anger. Then your actual blood pressure is shooting up. Your cortisol is working. You're actually damaging all. You're causing stress hormone. You're damaging your heart and cardiovascular. You're doing physiological harm.
Absolutely.
Is that worthwhile? Is that worth it? When 10 seconds of calmness, 2 minutes of restarting the computer, problem solved. You just caused yourself some cardiovascular harm.
So again, we has started this podcast as a way to examine all of these concepts.
All questions.
To question our reality.
Right.
And it's so interesting to me that this idea of anger, where it is so natural. People...
Very natural.
Kids get angry.
Easily. Toddlers, right?
Toddlers get angry.
They you take their pacifier away and they have a tantrum. Tantrums. What's a tantrum? It's a form of anger, right? It's the irascible nature of man.
It has to be controlled.
And woman.
It is part of our arc to control this, or at least part of our people's. I think for some people, it is a part of their entire arc of their life that they must learn to grapple with. And to control it. I've seen different expressions of anger. For example, I've known people that when they get angry, there's no outward expression. They actually cry. They get tears. Frustration results in tears. It's interesting because those people who respond that way have almost a benefit because people feel sorry for them and then they have no consequences of anger. So you might go to some people's house and you see holes in the wall the size of a fist, and you're like, what's going on here? Well, there obviously was a consequence to that anger. It had to manifest itself into somebody punching a hole in a wall.
Absolutely.
Versus somebody who, when they get angry, there's no holes in the wall. It's an internal cry. They cry. They become so emotional that it results in tears. And what's happening there, I think, as you said, there's damage occurring internally. And I've even heard it said that depression is a form of anger turned inward. That you're damaging yourself and your ability, your emotional state because you're so frustrated or angry.
Think of it a kind of energy. And energy never gets destroyed or created. It's always transforming into different media, right? So there's a certain negativity to anger, right? It can be used for positive, but it itself is kind of a negative emotion, right? That energy has to go somewhere. It has to be released. It either stays in your body and causes chronic damage in addition to acute damage, or it gets released into the world.
What do you think that is? Why do some people have really bad tempers? And there's some people who will never lose their temper. It doesn't mean they don't get angry. They just never lose the composure.
It's your psychological makeup, your consciousness, your psychology,
your
personality.
Raised. Is it also how you're raised?
Partly,
the culture,
yeah.
The society, the culture that you're...
And temperature. People, it's known that people who are in hot climates have shorter fuses. It's very interesting how we're entrained into the environment. And people in colder climates, they're less likely to get angry like those people. In America... It's known that every summer, crime spikes when the temperature is the highest. People get more angry, they act out more. This is well known.
I heard a really funny comedian actually make a joke about that. It was a joke in the context of like gangsters in LA, how they're wearing these button-up shirts and they're so
hot.
Right,
yeah.
And they're like, all right, if the temperature goes up one more degree, all right, what's the temperature? 105? That's it. Drive by.
Right. Just unbutton your shirt, dude.
Or cool down, right? Yeah. Like take.
No, it's true.
It's interesting, right? When somebody's angry, what do you tell them? Cool down.
Right.
Cool down.
Are we separate from our environments? Absolutely not. We're entrained into the cosmos, right? Your sleeping, waking habits, your whole biology, everything's entrained, right? Hot days, hot summer days, people are more likely to get angry.
So anger is biological. Is that what I just heard you say?
It is absolutely biological, physiological, and psychological.
And it actually has manifestations that are measurable.
Correct.
Right? There's physiological metrics we can look at to see if somebody is experiencing the anger response.
Correct.
So I guess... the question is, does this... Okay. I mean, obviously, this needs to be managed. Anger has to be managed.
Anger management. Have you seen that movie? Adam Sandler? Right?
Love that movie. Goose Rabba. What's great in that film is that's so an example of...
So funny.
It is a great movie. So like, when he's on the airplane and they're like, sir, calm down. He's like, what? I am calm. I'm totally calm. Sir, calm down. And that actually results in him
exactly
getting more upset and
brilliant
and getting arrested, like he assaults a
so funny
flight attendant. But the point being here, there are people who on the surface look like they're managing their anger so well, but it's actually having a very... We have to have a healthy relationship with anger.
Energy. It's a release. That energy has to be managed.
So don't be scared of it, but don't like it either. That's dangerous.
It's like carrying a sword.
Anger, yeah. Anger makes some people feel good.
No, it's addictive. It's addictive.
That's
absolutely
fascinating right there.
It's addictive.
Anger is addictive.
Of course.
It can be addictive.
Of course.
Why? Why?
There must be a neurophysiological release of some hormones or chemicals that actually have an endorphin. Maybe there's endorphins, or maybe there's a release that comes immediately after. So there's a high that comes.
Do you think that in some relationships, people look to have a relationship with people that...
Yes.
So that it's almost like reinforces that ability for them to get angry?
Absolutely, yes. It's a relationship that only will lead to a downward spiral because they're looking for the spikes, the anger, and it creates a dynamic.
Just like with any addictive substance, right? It results in problems.
There's harm that comes from it.
There's harm. So it has to be managed. It by itself is not... Anger by itself is not a bad thing. I think...
No, it has benefits. Right?
I think it does have benefits. And I think it is valuable when you can recognize, hey, you're getting angry right now. I can sense that. Why don't we take a pause and think here for a second? It also is a way for me to realize that you're really serious about something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're a rational person, I mean, there are people who are just irrationally get angry, have no sense of control, but there are... It is a way for me to determine
that's very
that this actually means something to you.
You just put your finger on an interesting component of this, which is broadcasting to the community of other human beings. There's a serious matter here. When another human being or a group of people who are in your immediate vicinity, they sense you're angry, and you said this, you're broadcasting that there's something important and serious going on here. So they pay more attention to the problem. Because now you've inspired, you know, that they see, oh, this person is angry. There's something serious going
on. It says, look, what's going on here is not going to work for me.
Right, exactly.
Right? And we are constantly being put in, especially in our work environments, we're being put in situations where we have to manage anger, things that anger us or could anger us. We have to manage them through very bureaucratic means. I feel that sometimes that takes away some of the... What would be gravitas or
passion,
weight,
or passion, right?
But are we really allowed? We're not really allowed to be passionate.
No, you can be passionate,
but you have. But that's another. Passion's a very interesting one, actually.
We should do one on passion. That's. But you know, there's a line, right? And there's a continuum, but there's also a clear line. You know, there's a line and a space between something that's within the domain of passion versus the domain of anger. Because remember, passion is positive, anger is negative. But it can still be used positively, right? If I gave you a knife to make cook dinner with, you can use that knife to cause somebody harm.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, a negative or a potential negative that has to be utilized properly. Passion, you know, passion is generally a good thing as long as it's not like overboard and kind of, you know, infringing on people's, you know, space and time and, you know, their work or what have you. You know, passion is generally thought of as a positive thing, right? Because it's kind of its own perpetual energy source that allows you to accomplish very difficult tasks in life, you know, and feeds your motivation.
I want to go back to what you're talking about. You asked a question at the beginning of this podcast. You said, can we ever have justice without anger?
Right.
Right. Fascinating question.
Right. You know, what's interesting is there's so many elements, even though we really try to have a thematic topic per episode, we realize over and over again how even a single topic does not exist in isolation and is in a complex way.
We're going to shine light on the topic, but it's not exclusive.
No, like, it's interrelated.
We can't just have a topic about anger and not talk about how other ideas that we've discussed before reflect or are involved.
Well, they're interconnected.
It's all interconnected.
You know, you can't avoid the interconnections.
Is it a sin to be angry?
It can be. Correct. If you commit a crime with it. And the crime can be against yourself or it can be against other people.
So it's not bad to be angry, just...
If you're angry at
it's
home...
It's bad about the actions you...
You can cause psychological harm.
Wrath.
Yeah.
Is it one of the seven deadly sins?
It's one of the seven deadly sins.
Wrath.
So it's
not anger.
Right.
Wrath is the next... is in the spectrum of anger, right. Wrath is...
Next level.
It's almost like a loss of control. Anger may physiologically be necessary for us to put things in tune, send signals out that things are upsetting us. It's a way for us to comment on our reality, whatever's occurring at that moment.
Wrath is when your person dissolves into the cloud of wrath. You become one with wrath.
That wasn't the right one. I wanted to do the horn.
But he's always giving me like harps and little...
No, that was the wrong
Chuck
one.
Crazy. He is wildly out of control.
Okay, so sorry. Having too much fun.
Yeah, the idea is you no longer have control because you dissolve into the universe of wrath. And you actually become wrath. And that's dangerous because there's no
funny,
control.
Right? In seven... Yeah. That's
right.
Kevin Spacey character says that.
Right.
Now become wrath.
Exactly.
To close the loop. To
Star Wars too, right?
Yeah.
You become that. You become darkness, darkness itself, you know? So the idea is it also relates to addiction because you become the addiction. You lose yourself into that world. It is all consuming. Wrath. Even the word is, you know, aesthetically, it's wrath. You know, it's just it's like a roar. Wrath. Anger. You know, it's just got this, you know, kind of linguistic, you know. Yeah. It's, you know, language is an aesthetic, right? It's an aesthetic, okay? I mean, get me some potato chips, okay?
Well, you know, we are definitely in a reality where there's a lot of anger.
Correct.
And maybe it's being channeled in good ways, but I think oftentimes it's being channeled in very negative ways. And one of the biggest concerns I have for anger is actually not the person who is acting outward, because the person who's acting outward, we identify.
The deceiver with anger. Oh, that's dangerous.
The concept of passive aggressive, like, or
the worst.
Somebody who is so angry that they are turning it inside and acting nefarious or deceptive to do real harm.
Okay, question for you.
Because the person who's acting outward, they're identified. You've revealed yourself.
I was going to ask you this.
And it's going to diffuse because there's nowhere to go. Once you're that big and that loud and that angry and outwardly showing it, like, where am I going to go with this? Yeah, I'm revealing myself.
Who would you prefer to deal with?
The person who's quiet and maintains that anger within and then does awful, horrible things.
Okay, you've already answered the question because I was going to ask you, who would you prefer to deal with if you had person A or person B? Clearly, you've just answered the question. You would much rather have the outwardly angry person that you identify rather than the passive aggressor who's causing you harm subtly and in the background.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you walk into a room, say, you know, on this podcast, right? Say we upset somebody, really upset somebody, but they go on the comments and they blast us. Okay, great. I've identified you. But what about the listener who is so offended and gets so angry that they make a plot? They find out where we live. I mean, it's just crazy. But, and then they attack you at night. Exactly. Right. I mean, think about that. You're asking, who would I rather deal with?
Yeah, that's right.
Really, the person who identifies themselves is always easier to deal with. The person who's lurking in the shadows with their anger,
wrath,
be wary. Be very, very scared of that person.
They have become wrath.
So, wrath, anger, this idea is interesting in terms of its manifestation in our reality. It's either outward, where it's out in the open and it's very visible, and then something can be done, versus the person who's angry. A nation is attacked, but they don't attack back right away. They plan, and then they launch, you know, a horrible retaliation, maybe even unjustified, maybe much worse. This is something we all have to contend with. We all have to be very, very aware. Every interaction we get in, you could be in a room talking with people, think it's all friendly, but this person is actually really angry with you.
Yeah,
but they don't reveal it.
It's a gateway to evil.
Whoa.
Evil empire.
You know what? Really, you're going to have to define evil. Evil is when you do what? Harm? It's when...
I direct the audience to the people of the lie by... what's the guy's name? Scott... something.
Yeah.
The People of the Lie is one of the most extraordinary books written in the past few decades, because it really talks about everyday evils and evils we don't identify and we don't deal with because people don't want to think and deal with evil, when in fact it's all around you. It's being committed by people you know right now in very subtle ways.
It's People of the Lie, The Hope for Healing Human Evil. It's a remarkable book.
What's the author's name again?
Scott Peck.
Scott Peck, right. Dr. Scott Peck.
He might lose some people, because in the book, he gets into exorcisms, and he gets into observation of people who are possessed.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes somebody who, as a psychiatrist, as a person of science, so to speak, I mean, he has... degrees. This is not somebody
he's a practicing,
correct,
you know.
Correct. Yeah. So as a person of science, he starts to recognize that evil is something much...
In fact, what he does...
Much scarier than you think.
Right. And sorry to interrupt, but what he said in the book is, he said, we need to stop putting this under the rug, and we need to identify it as an actual potentially medical condition that needs to be scientifically studied, because it's so bad and causes so much harm. Why are we not calling evil evil and everyday evil and the People of the Lie, which is everybody, basically?
Yes.
That's a very profound book, because it's telling people, wake up. Evil is all around. You're committing it, and you refuse to see it and call it out. Yeah. I mean, it's the ultimate call to one of the ultimate calls to truth. Everybody should read that book. It is absolutely essential, because he gets into he puts a mirror and says, look at what these people are doing. Case studies, case study after case study that he goes through, even before he gets into the exorcism. What parents do to their children. Did you remember? Do you remember those examples that he showed? Absolutely vile and horrific in very subtle ways. Oh, here's, yeah. Oh, we got you a Christmas gift. It happens to be the gun that your brother committed suicide with.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
I mean, can it get any sicker than that?
Right. And okay. And he, in the book, as he's interviewing these parents, this scenario is that these two parents give a rifle to their son. This rifle was previously owned by...
his older brother committed suicide.
Yes, and he with that rifle.
The same one.
And when he questions, he said, don't you think that this is not... They become offended. And he, at one point, he describes... It's beautiful, because as a psychiatrist, he reveals that, you know, we have our own feelings and intuitions and thoughts about people. We're not just purely objective.
Of course not.
As a psychiatrist, you would think the psychiatrist would be non-judgmental. No. He reveals his own judgments of that as he's listening to these parents. He's like, these people don't
realize. He indicts them,
and he has a judgment of that they sort of represent a kind of evil that they would think that it is appropriate to give this present to the, and that the son actually ends up being much closer to his aunt. I think
right.
he wants to move
he
in.
He moved,
with,
yeah.
Right, he moves in because
he basically gives example after example of subtle forms of true evil. That people, everyday people are committing.
People are walking around yeah. thinking that they're such good people. They're
your school teacher.
Yeah.
They're your neighbor, right? They're you're in your own family. Okay. They're you. Watch out. Okay.
That's why. Yeah, exactly.
They're.
So we went on that digression because we wanted to sort of get this idea of like, what is evil? But evil is something that is such a hard topic to describe. So let's go back to the idea of anger. When does anger turn evil? Because it's not by itself evil.
Correct.
Right?
It's not evil, but it can be a gateway.
It can be a gateway.
It's a door. Here's, think about it like this.
Almost justifying evil, justifying.
This is the visual. That is the realm of wrath. Anger is over here. The door opens. It's an opening into wrath, which can be evil, or into evil, right? Depending on how you set it up. It is an opening. It is an opening. Now you've become angry, or you've become wrath, or you're entering into that state. Be wary.
Have you lost your humanity at that point?
You begin to lose your humanity.
You're owned, right? By your own
now, the
psychological
God,
condition.
The God of anger now becomes, you know, you're now worshiping the God of anger. You're in the realm. You're in the universe. You've dissolved. You've disintegrated into wrath. Your humanity's gone. I refuse to be harped.
Joe Gracie, he likes
man.
The horn, everybody.
Joe Gracie.
He likes the horn. Well, okay. I'm really impressed with this topic that we were able to have this discussion and not get mad at each other. I am Kuldeep Tagore.
And I'm Azeki.
This is Screaming Into the Mic. Write, subscribe, engage, become wrath.
No. Don't become wrath. The QR Lab. Come and get some. We want to emphasize that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely our own, and they do not reflect the official policies or positions of our employers and places of employment or any of their affiliates. Additionally, our discussions on this podcast should not be considered professional advice or endorsements of any particular organizations, products, or individuals. We're here to share our thoughts and stimulate conversation, but we encourage you to do your own research and form your own opinions.